Annie is a 1977 Broadway musical, with music by Charles Strauss, lyrics by Martin Charnin, and a book by Thomas Mann. It was based on a popular comic strip by Harold Gray that dates back to the 1920s, and there have been multiple movies and spin-offs of Annie, but most people are probably familiar with the 1982 film that cemented this curly, red-haired little orphan Annie into the public consciousness basically forever. For the 12 people who have escaped the Sprite of Annie, it is in fact the story of a girl in an orphanage who searches for her parents with the help of a millionaire named Oliver Warbucks, who I swear to God in this show is actually called Daddy Warbucks. And of course, along the way, they have to avoid the scheming of the orphanage matron, Miss Hannigan. Now, this show was certainly cemented into the consciousness of my guest, Abby Erdman, who loved Annie so much as a child that she imagined being an orphan must be pretty cool. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Annie. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Super excited to be here.
What are we talking about?
Today we're talking about Annie, my favorite Broadway musical of all time. It's actually part of my own personal brand, you know. My friends know I've always really loved the show.
That is wonderful.
Yep.
I think this came up because we just started talking about the fact that I have a musical theater podcast, and you were like, I love Annie.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, would you like to talk about Annie?
Yes, always yes.
So why is it your favorite?
Part of it is, I think it was the first musical that I ever saw. Because, I mean, when I was really young, I don't think I ever went to a show. But I had my video, my little VCR, and my videotapes. Actually, for my 5th birthday, I was given a VHS of Annie. And that version was actually the made-for-TV version, which shows the second sort of iteration of Annie. The first one had Carol Burnett, Eileen Quinn, and then this one was starring a much different cast. It was made in 1999, and I just wouldn't stop watching it.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was kind of my first exposure to musical theater, which I'm also in love with, but Annie started it all, and I think at that age, I really related to her character. She's kind of the eternal optimist, and I think it kind of shaped my young self into an eternal optimist. So it all went uphill from there.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you didn't relate with Annie too much. She does not have a great life.
Well, actually, funny story about that. I would say I did relate to Annie too much because, you know, when you're young and you don't really understand how the world works, watching Annie a lot made me think it was cool to be an orphan. I thought that was kind of glamorous. Annie does totally glamorize being an orphan a little bit, let's be real.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I want to get into a whole conversation about, like, the pop culture depictions of orphans that,
yes,
I think all came from Annie.
Oh, yeah.
But first I wanted to just touching on your sort of personal journey here. So have you had the chance to, like, go see it live as an adult or anything like that?
Yes, I have seen it, I think, twice live. Once was at the Chaneyhouse Dinner Theater. I think my parents took me and a few friends there for my birthday. It was a dream. That was my first time seeing it live. I've also seen a high school iteration of Annie. It was actually Annie Jr., which I know they kind of junior plays that are kind of complicated in an adult, but it was Annie, so I didn't get why they had to tone it down.
I think it was just shorter is the
That's probably,
the big difference.
Yeah, that's probably it. But it was high schoolers, but whatever. Still a great show.
Side plug, if you're interested in hearing more about weird adult shows that are adapted for High School Musicals, become a member of the Incomparable Network and listen to our bonus episode. That's the thing we did this week.
Yes. That's awesome. And then I must have seen one other version of it because it was also fantastic, but I've never seen it on Broadway, and I'm waiting for the day it comes back.
It's going to eventually.
It has to. It's a classic.
It was on Broadway not too long ago. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I was actually, during the time it was on Broadway, I went on a high school trip with my art history class, and we were going to see one Broadway show while we were there, and we got a vote. And Annie was an option, which I obviously lobbied so hard for. And we ended up seeing once. And I hated it. It made me so mad.
Wait. Okay, this is not about once, but why did you hate it?
It was, I don't know.
Just because it wasn't Annie,
okay? It was the classic bait and switch. I was so disappointed. I was like,
oh,
no.
Not my kind of musical. I really don't like modern musicals.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, let's not talk about that anymore. Let's just focus on Annie.
Forget about Once. Don't ever say that name in front of me.
It'd be a different episode.
I will be skipping that one.
Rough.
I love your show, but I will be skipping your one on Once.
It's too personal.
It is.
Well, okay. So that sort of gets at a couple of things that I think are totally quintessential about Annie. And mm-hmm. one of them is that it's such a classic. Mm-hmm. It is just like one of the most classic musicals out there.
Yes.
And it was amazingly successful. It had a movie that sort of ingrained it into the public consciousness. But it also started, I think the musical is what really sort of propelled it into there, with the movie as well coming mm-hmm. from that. But it's been around for decades beforehand, and was like a comic strip and like different weird adaptations of it. And like the idea of Little Orphan Annie has been a thing in America for 100 years, which right. I think is so funny.
Yeah. I mean, I think Annie is truly an encapsulation of the American dream. You know, she has a rags to riches story. She has that eternal optimism. She loves dogs. You know, it's everything that is quintessentially American wrapped in a tiny, curly-haired, redheaded package. And so I think that's why people have always been drawn to her, because she is kind of the child in all of us, and she is kind of, you know, that voice of hope and optimism and never giving up that I think a lot of people lose as they grow into adulthood. So I can see why Annie has always had that really strong draw from people, you know, for people of all ages, across decades, etc. Because her story and her character really is timeless.
One thing that I find really interesting about her as well is that she was sort of explicitly used as a answer to Oliver Twist and mm-hmm. to like the Charles Dickens stories.
Right.
And they were like, we are going to make our new orphan. She's going to be American. She's going to be a girl.
That's so true. I never even thought of it that way.
And I think that like I think Annie and Oliver are kind of like, they really go hand in hand.
Right. Yes.
And they are they're part of the same thing that we alluded to a few minutes ago, which is like America's, and I guess sort of America and England, are both really into orphans.
Yes,
and
I know.
Orphanages.
Yes.
Why?
I have asked myself this question many times. And I think it isn't just in musicals. I mean, a lot of popular Disney narratives, you know, there's usually one parent missing.
Or
like
both.
In all the princess stories. Yeah, like Ariel only has a dad. Cinderella, both parents are out of her life. Man, I could go on, but I won't, because for the sake of time. But I think maybe it's just representative of a certain type of trauma that people relate to. I think we could really get into that, but we'd kind of be pondering at this point. What do you think?
I think it's like a combination of two things, where I think it's sort of the Disney narrative of where it's, I think it's kind of just easier to not have parents in the picture.
Yeah.
And that automatically just like places the sort of hero's journey thing on a much younger character mm-hmm. than you could otherwise get away with, I think. And so I think it's for like narrative purposes, and it makes it interesting, and it's like an automatic sympathy kind of thing. And then I also think I think it all goes back to Charles Dickens and the way he's been explicitly referenced for these kinds of orphan characters, because he was depicting a realistic situation and like the real life that was happening around him and in his times. And then we were like, let's continue that narrative forever.
Right. Right. And what's interesting about Annie's kind of orphan story is that it is so central to her character and to the overall storyline. I mean, she's just trying to find her parents. That's what drives her through the whole play. And she does, in a way. She finds Daddy Warbucks, but...
Yeah, it's like that's sort of such an essential human thing, is like that familial bond. And I think that when you put a character on stage and you're like, this is Annie, she's trying to find her parents, everyone in the audience goes, wow, I'm ready to die for Annie.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's really representative of maybe not, you know, the... Everyone in life is seeking some sort of better relationship with someone in their life. Whether or not it's parents, maybe it's a closer relationship with your parents, or maybe it's closer relationships with your friends. So I think relationship-related struggles is super relatable for people from the get-go.
What's really interesting about this particular narrative about orphans, though, is that it's a very strong focus on the orphanage, which in actuality is not really an institution that exists anymore.
Right.
I mean, it did in, like, the 1920s when this takes place, but I think that because these stories are considered so timeless and classic and ingrained in pop culture, that I think most people, even if it's unconscious or what, just assume that, like, there still are groups of 20 orphan children shoved together in some horrible place somewhere.
I definitely lived under that that train of thought until I was older than I'd like to admit, to put it straight. But actually, that is something that the 2014 iteration of Annie does address. They actually have, they changed the lyrics of It's a Hard Knock Life from No One Cares for You a Smidge When You Live in Orphanage to Something, Something, Something When You're in Foster Care. And it rhymed and it sounded good. But they did kind of shift it a little bit. They did acknowledge that orphanages are no longer a thing in the United States.
Yeah, because the 2014 version, like, they deliberately set it in modern day, right?
It wasn't. Yes, yes. Yeah. And full disclaimer, I haven't watched the full 2014 version. I couldn't find a place to stream it. But I have watched as many clips as I possibly could just to educate myself. I didn't hate it, to be honest.
I completely missed that. I actually haven't seen it. But I also am not in, like, an Annie acolyte, so I don't feel bad about that.
No, it's totally fine. I mean, it was very controversial when it came out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is something we can maybe touch on a little bit as well.
We got,
But just continuing with the – sorry, I'm really on about this – is the whole orphanage theme, because I think that it's one of the things that you mentioned is, like, it made you feel like it was really cool to be an orphan.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought it was so cool. And I would even – I'm not proud of this, but when I was really young – and I really love it. I would not say the peak of my love for Annie, but definitely on my way up there. I would even tell my friends. I'd kind of take them aside and I'd be like, guys, like, don't tell anyone, but I don't know. I just, like, don't feel like I fit in with my family. Like, I feel like I was secretly adopted. You know, I think I'm an orphan. Like, I thought it was really cool to be an orphan. But looking back, it's like, okay, I'm clearly my parents' child. I am not an orphan. But, you know, everyone has a movie that made them want to be something super weird. Annie was that for me, definitely.
Oh, yeah. And I do think that's sort of a – that's not a specific to you thing either, I think. That, like, that it tends to be a thing of, like, let's pretend our parents are gone and we have to survive for ourselves, or we have to, like, get adopted by rich people.
Yeah.
You know, it's – and it's this – fun game when you're a kid and you don't understand what that actually means. And then there's the characters like Miss Hannigan.
Oh, yeah. The older I get, the more I understand her character.
No.
No, seriously. I mean, I think she – I thought when I was a child, I thought she was just the worst person alive. And when I recently rewatched the famous little girl's number, I was like, you know what? I kind of get her. Like, she's coming – you know, she hasn't had the best life either. She's in this dead-end job that she hates, and she doesn't really see a light at the end of the tunnel, and she's just tired of all these little girls running around and screaming all the time. And there's a really funny line. It's like, I'm an ordinary woman with feelings. I like a man to nibble on my ear. And it's like, you know, she's just trying to get hers, and she's stuck, you know, in a job she hates. I get her. I get her now.
Pearls. Lucky me, lucky me, look at what I'm dripping with. Oh, girls!
I think we all have a little Miss Hannigan in us.
That is a really funny take. I know, I get that, and I think there's that character is played very comedically.
Yes.
And very kind of, like, campy, and it's especially in the song Little Girls, and it's like, yeah, you're right. If I was surrounded by children, I'd also go insane. But
yeah, you know, let's all put ourselves in Miss Hannigan's shoes. And, you know, I'm not trying to defend what she does later in the storyline. It's nothing for anyone to be proud of. But before she gets there, I get where she's at.
I think we can sympathize with her frustrations and still unilaterally condemn her child abuse.
Yes, absolutely.
Ooh.
This podcast is not to rip on anyone who is part of the foster care system.
Just Miss Hannigan.
Just Miss Hannigan. She's the worst.
But let's actually come in and talk about this little orphan Annie.
Yes.
I just have a question for you as the resident Annie expert, mm-hmm. About the red hair thing.
Yes.
Because she's like very iconically a redhead.
Yes.
But she also has blonde hair in the original art. Mm-hmm. So is it just the movie that made that iconic?
That is a very good question. I do not know the official history behind Annie's red hair. However, I don't see it as a necessity for anyone playing Annie. I think Kuvenchane Wallace proves that. You know, Annie is not, the character of Annie should not be limited to little redheaded Caucasian girls at all, because her character and her optimism is so universal. It's a role that could be played by anyone. And I think there are some people who disagree with me on that. I don't want to say purists, because, you know, I don't know, people who just feel really strongly about Annie's hair. And to that I say, no, just no. And actually, the first live performance of Annie I ever saw, the lead was not wearing a curly red wig. And I thought that was totally fine. So,
yeah, I have done some extremely quick internet research called mm-hmm. Wikipedia.
Amazing.
And I've discovered that one, Little Orphan Annie has a very long Wikipedia page. and it appears that she had red hair in the comics and then she did in the movie, but it wasn't, I don't think it was like enforced in casting necessarily,
yeah.
or like in costuming. I'm just demonstrating that, like, literally, if you look at the musical, like, program art, like, she's got blonde hair in that, so obviously not.
Right.
But I also just want to point out that also in the original comic, her characteristic feature was that she had cold, dead eyes.
Oh, yeah, the blank, just kind of the two white circles with black outlines.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-mm.
So if we really want to be super true to the comics, we have to cast children with no eyes.
Yeah, I think definitely. And there's a lot of stuff from the comics that needs to be changed and needs to be updated, kind of to the modern era, I would say. I think there is a character named Punjab in the comics, which is kind of a racist caricature in many ways. And I think he actually appeared in a couple versions of the movie, if I recall. However, the second television, the made-for-TV movie, the 1999 version, that character has red hair, but it is not curly. It's kind of a red, it's like a chic red bob.
Huh. That's very interesting.
Yeah, she rocked it. So actually, because that was the first version I was exposed to, when I came back and I saw the original, I was like, what is this curly-headed girl doing in here?
Oh, no.
And so that's why I'm like, you know, Annie, her character, her hair is not central to her character.
Yeah.
Even though people want to make it so. Let Annie be whoever she wants to be.
Yeah, I feel like that's a thing with, and I will say you see it in pop culture adaptations of like, oh, but they're supposed to have this color hair. But it's interesting, I think you see that most with people who have red hair and then followed by people who are blonde. It's like, how dare you change that? But it's incredibly interesting how often that corresponds with changing the race of the casting. And it's like, well, almost every person who has red and blonde hair is white. So that, and those are the ones that are like people get mad about when they're changed. It's like, there's patterns there.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that everyone who's really attached to Annie is red with red hair is like racist, but that's like a leap. But I do think that on the whole, there are like some suspicious patterns that can be drawn from where people tend to get mad about that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Yeah, no, a lot of people got mad about the 2014 version of Annie because of the casting of Kuvenchane Wallace, which, go watch it. She is so talented. She is so cute. And Jamie Foxx kind of also kills it as Daddy Warbucks. That's the thing, is that, like, Broadway is already so limited. And it's gradually getting more diverse. But it's not, it's really dumb to limit roles to people of certain races that don't need to be limited. And I think Annie is a classic example. Like, race should not be an issue in casting. I mean, like, you shouldn't just cast white people as Annie. Her story is universal.
Absolutely. That's the whole point of what you said at the very beginning, is like, she is representing this sort of American ideal. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to limit that to a white character, then that says a lot about what you think the American ideal is.
Yes. Yeah.
One thing that always happens to me when we record episodes of this show is I find myself just liking the musical more and more as we continue. Because, I mean, like, I don't have anything against Annie, but it's never been one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. But just listening to you talk about, like, why is she such a great character and why she matters so much, I'm like, wow, you're right.
She is great. I mean, I think Annie is often overlooked because it's so well known. Mm-hmm. And so people don't usually want to revisit something that they think they already know so well. But let's also give Annie some credit for being so timeless. I'm pretty sure she has more remakes, or movie remakes, than I want to say just about any other musical. There's now 3 iterations of her story that you can rent. And I think there was also a made-for-TV movie about Annie's royal adventure or something. It did not get good reviews when I was Googling it. But, you know, she's an icon. Let Annie be the icon that she is, you know?
Oh, my gosh. I found out that they tried to make a stage sequel called Annie to Miss Hannigan's Revenge or something like that. And it just said there were universally disastrous reviews.
I would have loved to see that.
Oh, my gosh. I think, like, obviously never got to Broadway. It was just some out-of-town thing, and it never ended up going anywhere mm-hmm. because they tried to rewrite it, and it still was bad. But
right.
I could see maybe someone out there has that elusive bootleg of Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge.
I would pay big for that script. Anyone who has any connections out there to that script, get it to me. I will pay real money.
Let's produce it here.
Yes.
I also, when I started researching this, realized that I had in my mind just linked Shirley Temple and Annie. And for no actual reason, they're just both iconic curly-haired girls.
I mean, yeah, you summed it up right there. I mean, they're both known for their optimism and their adorableness. They both have a very curly head of hair, traditionally. And they're both kind of got the whole triple threat thing going for them. Singing, dancing, acting.
Yeah. I want to believe that Annie would also grow up to become a United States ambassador. I think that she could do that really well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's actually – so there's a great – it's there's a great version in the Broadway musical. It's a reprise of Tomorrow where Annie – you know, it's interesting to see which new characters come in different versions of Annie. In this – in the Broadway version, FDR was there.
Yeah.
And the head of the FBI, and basically because, you know, Daddy Warbucks is so connected. Anyway, so there's a scene with FDR, and Annie starts singing, and someone in the room goes, "Quiet, little girl!" And I think either FDR or Oliver Warbucks chimes in and is like, "No, no, let her sing." And she kind of brings together this room of, you know, angry old male politicians with her music. So I think kind of projecting that she would one day be a U.S. ambassador in, you know, Annie 5, How I Saved the World,
Annie
is totally
five, Tokyo
valid.
Drift.
Because she has that power. And she actually, you know, you can see it in the Broadway play.
Yeah, okay. Oh, my gosh. This was near the top of my list to talk about, and we have come to it. So let's just dive into this. It is absolutely wild that part of the plot of Annie is that she basically single-handedly changes the course of U.S. history. Like, I think that we all know the story of Annie as, like, this little girl who was an orphanage and she gets adopted by a rich man and was happily ever after. And I personally forgot, and I think most people do, that part of the plot is that she, like, inspires the New Deal. What?
I mean, that may harken back to her, you know, her early 20th century roots, mm-hmm. Because she very much was a pop culture icon during that time. So maybe they just wanted to throw that in there as a little ode to the Great Depression. But yeah, I never really put two and two together and thought about that, but you're right.
Because the film takes place during the Great Depression, mm-hmm. and the film and the show. And I think there's more about it in the show than there is in the movie, but it's still like, there's still scenes in both in which she meets FDR, and then she sings Tomorrow at him, and he's like, you're right, we should be optimistic. I'm going to make the New Deal.
And that's the plot. What? I'm telling you, Annie is the most underrated Broadway character of all time.
She's really out here doing the work.
She is. She's doing the work of five dudes on the front, you know? All with, you know, the voice of an angel.
Musicals are so weird, and I love it so much.
I know. It's also funny. It's that you'd think that something so big, like changing the course of American history, would be given a little more screen time in the plot of Annie. But it's really brief when they touch upon it.
Yeah. It's like you could generally take that part out, and it would not change the plot of
not
the movie.
Not at all. Not at all.
Which is confusing. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm don't get me wrong. I'm extremely into it. But I almost wish that they had, like, maybe that's influences how she learned about herself, or I don't know, like that, like, influences her journey. But it really is just sort of like a, and now we're going to fix the country and back to our regularly scheduled programming.
I mean, she doesn't have much of a character arc, to be completely honest. She's really just, you know, high octane optimism the whole plot. So not completely surprised by that, but.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting. I feel like Daddy Warbucks is the person who really has a character arc in this.
Yeah, I mean, Annie's kind of the original Manic Pixie Dream Girl. She's just here to change everyone else's life and more or less remain the same. Yeah. Maybe a little bit richer in the end. But
yeah, I mean, she gets heavily rewarded for her emotional labor, so yes. I think we can call that fair.
Yes, she is fairly paid for that.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know if this is on your little docket of things to talk about, but I would like to give a shout out to Annie's girl gang, the Orphans, and I think they're often overlooked, but it's kind of, I mean, watching that as a kid and being like, wow, I wish I had a group of friends like that, was always kind of, you know, what do you think about the little girl gang she has there?
Yeah, I think that there's there's more attention given to that than you would think. And like she has multiple songs with her girls, mm-hmm. and they help her out and they help her kind of like escape the orphanage.
Yes.
And they're like with her thick and thin through everything. Which I'd be kind of mad with if I was one of the other girls and she got to be I was like helping her escape and then she gets to be adopted by a rich guy. But they also get helped in the end, obviously.
I know, because the one thing that I love about Annie is that she experiences a huge life change and the whole time she's trying to watch out for her girls back home. You know, I think at the end of one of the movies, they all get invited over for Christmas and they get showered with gifts and, you know, she seems like a great friend, which is another reason why I think she's so, you know, endeared to so many people.
Yeah, like she's not out here like, oh, I'm so, like I can only look out for myself and I'm just going to get out mm-hmm. of this situation. And like the other characters are just a backdrop. Like they really are part of the show and they're part of her life. And mm-hmm. she does not leave them behind. Like she's like, no, save my friends. Because it is a hard knock life.
It is a hard knock life.
For us. Indeed. God, that's such a good song.
I know. I actually was talking to my friend earlier today right before I came here. And I told her, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be on a podcast today. I'll be talking about Annie. And she goes, oh, well, you know, just this morning I was doing a little cleaning and singing the hard knock life to myself. And she said, you know, it made it seem a little bit more fun. And so, you know, The Hard Knock Life is another one of the great songs from Annie that you will just always be able to relate to. Because at one point in your life, you will always feel like life has got you down and life is kind of treating you badly. But, I mean, if you sing a little catchy show tune to yourself, you might feel a little better.
It's the hard knock life for us. It's the hard knock life for us. Sentry and we.
Like, I'm just singing it in my head now, but I think that so many people know this song, and so many people, like you said, like, sing it to themselves while doing the chores, and even though it has a lot of lines specifically about being an orphan, it's also just, like, being sad because you have to clean stuff.
Yeah.
And who can't relate to that?
Yeah. Who can't relate to being sad about, you know, having to do minuscule tasks?
Yeah.
Although in their case, it was not minuscule. They had to shine that dump Or they had to clean, wait, what was it? You better clean this dump till it shines like the top of the Chrysler Building. It's a good line.
And then, of course, there's Tomorrow.
Yes, my favorite, my personal favorite song.
Wow. Like in the show or ever?
Ever. No, I mean in the show. But okay. I will, that song always will make me want to tear up a little bit when I listen to it.
The sun will come out tomorrow, so you gotta hang on to tomorrow. Come what may, tomorrow, tomorrow, I love you. Tomorrow, you're always a day away.
I think that's another thing that sort of, it tomorrow is Annie, and it is such a representation of the show. Mm-hmm. And I think it suffers from the same problem that Annie as a show does, in that it's so classic and iconic that it's considered kind of corny and cliche, and right. It's like overlooked. Even though if you go back to it, you're like, yeah, it is corny, but it's still like, it still is a very good song, and it still is like, it's been parodied so much that people forget that it was original once upon a time.
Yes.
Yeah. You see those kind of things come up in pop culture, and it's unfortunate because it's like, on one hand, it's great that it's become so successful and so prevalent, but on the other hand, it gets distorted over time until people are like, oh, it's cliche, and it's like, but it wasn't. It made the cliche.
Yeah, right. I think no matter how corny you think Tomorrow is, everyone will have a point in their life where they will unexpectedly hear Tomorrow, and it will speak to them on a very deep level. And I think that's the beauty of the song, is that you never know when it's going to unexpectedly pop up and kind of hit you hard and, you know, make you think and make you a little sad and make you a little happy. And it's kind of a melancholy song.
Mm-hmm. It's a total acknowledgement that today is not good, but tomorrow the sun will come out and it's only a day away.
And I think that's a universal truth of life. I mean, being sad with, you know, anything really. It could be the political climate, or it could be you lost your job. I mean, it speaks to so many hard facts of life, and then kind of helps you get past it. So I hope Tomorrow will never go out of style. I love that song.
Are there any other songs from Annie that you want to talk about?
I think NYC is a great song. It's kind of the song when Oliver Warbucks and Grace take Annie into the big city for the first time. And in every iteration I've seen of Annie, this is always such a fun number, because it kind of takes a lot of great stuff about New York and, you know, smashes it down into under 4 minutes, and it's full of lights and dancers and rockettes, and it's a really high energy song. And there's a great moment is when, I don't know what her official like cast name is, I think it's usually Young Star or something, she gets off a bus and she picks up the chorus and sings, NYC, just got here this morning, $3, 2 bags, 1 me. And it's always, her voice is, they always cast this woman very well. She's got this really bright and beautiful voice, and it's always kind of taken my breath away every time I've seen it live. So I think NYC is one of those underrated songs. I know Broadway is really known for songs that kind of stroke the ego of New York, and I usually don't like them, but NYC is the one exception.
Wow, okay. That's so true, though. But I think that gets a little bit of a pass because you have a lot of musicals that are just kind of about show business and about New York, whereas right. I think Annie just, like, takes that moment to appreciate and then returns back to the story.
And it's kind of fun. If you listen closely to this woman's kind of musical monologue, she talks about her big dreams, and she kind of ideates living in a penthouse, and then it kind of comes back and she goes, tonight, the why, you know, she's not there, but she's going to get there. And it's another moment of kind of that American optimism that is so, you know, intertwined throughout Annie. And I love that moment every time.
That is wonderful. There, I also want to give a shout out to Easy Street.
Yes, yes.
Which is a song that all our villains sing together when mm-hmm. they decide they're going to conspire to just sort of get money out of Daddy Warbucks.
Yep.
and trying to figure out how to do that. And
Easy Street. Easy Street.
Easy Street.
Annie is
key.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I think that it's just a fun song, and yes. It's like this show has really fun villains, and mm-hmm. that they're pretty comical, and it's Miss Hannigan and her brother's wife, and they're all just very weaselly, like mm-hmm. they're not really nuanced, just a matter of like the fun comic villains, and so they get fun comic songs.
Yes, they're very comical. Actually, another really we can talk about Easy Street for a second or come back to it, but. There's a great song on the topic of songs that are underappreciated in Annie. There's an awesome song that appears in the first movie edition of Annie, I believe. It's called Dumb Dog. I don't think that it was on Broadway. I think it may have been original to the movie. Don't quote me on that. However, it's a great song where Annie's just run away from the orphanage at the beginning of the film, and it's a song where she basically meets Sandy, who... We haven't even talked about Sandy yet. I'm so surprised. But it's a great song, and it's a song where she's like, "Dumb dog, why are you following me? I ain't got a crumb dog. How about just letting me be?
How about letting me be? I ain't gonna feed you. Ain't got a scrap for you, need you. Don't give a rap for you, dog."
And so basically it's kind of this back and forth that she sings to the dog, and at the end of it, she's like, "Oh, I like you. You're really great. I'll take you home." And it's really heartwarming. It's really well done. I recommend everyone go watch it. I think you could probably find it on YouTube.
Oh, that's really cute. Oh. We haven't talked about Sandy, really.
Sandy!
Annie has a dog, because you know she's America's sweetheart.
Yes, and America loves dogs
so much. But yeah, she finds a dog on the street, and then that dog like leads her to her dreams.
Yes,
basically.
Well, it's kind of funny because Annie is to Sandy as Daddy Warbucks is to Annie. Mm. It's kind of like a everyone's safe in each other kind of thing.
But you know, really, he rescued me.
It's so true. It's always really fun in whatever show you see, whatever, you know, ensemble you see of Annie to see which type of dog they cast as Sandy. I've seen a yellow lab as Sandy, and then there's always kind of the classic shaggy brown sandy colored mutt sometime, although I think the one they used in the movie was a purebred, but Sandy is always super cute, and I will say there are some dog actors that are better than others.
Wow, hot takes.
Yes, hot takes.
I once had a theater class where it wasn't even like a performance class or anything. It was a historical theater class, but I'll never forget the quote of, "You should never put a dog on stage because a dog is not pretending to be a dog, and they will always be a better actor than you."
That's very true.
I just like after I heard that, I was like, "Wow, yeah, I'm never going to think about animals on stage the same way again. They're really not acting, are they?"
No, they're just doing their thing and you know doing what they can for treats, but. I think, you know, I wonder when they kind of were writing Annie's character back in the day. I mean, when they were coming up with the comic strip or however she originated. I wonder why they put the dog in there. They're like, "Wow, we have a really cute girl. Let's make her even cuter by giving her an animal sidekick."
Yeah.
But anyways.
Also, I just showed this, you know, like Annie's not just cute and musically talented. She's got a kind soul. She's going to save that dog.
Yep.
She's going to do that thing.
She's going to snatch him right off the streets.
No, don't say it like that.
No. I mean, he is a street dog. There is, you know, plot lines across different iterations of Annie where Sandy is pursued by dog catchers or I think in one – it's so hard to keep track of them all, to be completely honest. But in one film, Miss Hannigan is going to send him away to some meat factory. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of violent, but spoiler alert, the dog survives, everyone's happy, you know.
One thing that I wanted to touch on with this is I find very interesting, and maybe you have more to speak on this as someone who's actually seen the full show, but it kind of seems like, so Annie escapes from the orphanage, and then eventually she gets brought back, and it's at that moment, like, she's in Miss Hannigan's office, and then the person comes in and was like, "I need to borrow an orphan," which is also a disgrace.
Yes. Yes, I have a lot to say on this topic. So, sorry, finish your thought and I will dive right
in. Yeah, that's part one, or just that sentence, question mark, is the whole thing. And then also just like, it kind of feels to me as like Annie is only picked because of genuinely the luck of the draw, which is fine, except for she already had this adventure where she had escaped. And so it's like, it just feels very plot-wise, like there's the two disparate parts where you're developing your character and developing the plot, but they didn't connect them together, and I wish they had.
Yes. Okay, I'm trying to figure out the best way to answer this. Okay, I'm going to start with the first part. I would like to call into question the core plot of Annie, which is a rich man being like, hey, I'm going to call up an orphanage and invite one to stay with me for 2 weeks, live in the lap of luxury, and then, send them right back. Like, if Annie had not been her optimistic, charming self, she'd been a regular old, I don't know.
Normal child.
She would have gone straight back to that hellhole come the end of the play. Which is like...
Can you imagine that's the end of Annie? She gets sent back?
In what kind of world is this not incredibly cruel to do? You know, which is great. I mean, he's not like, I want to donate money to the orphanage. No, he's like, I just want to have a kid over and like have it look good for my image, like show them, you know, what life with money is like, and then just send him right back. Like, it didn't even matter, which isn't what happens in the end. But I just think at its core, that's not very nice.
It's also, how are they even allowed to do that? You can't just borrow children.
It was 1930 or whatever. It was, or 1928. I don't know. It was a dark time.
They cared about nothing.
Actually, what year was Annie was supposed to take place? I'm very curious now.
1933.
Okay. Yeah. You know, she made the best of it. Now, in terms of her escaping and then coming back, basically the way it works in the plot is that Annie she wants to get out of the orphanage. I think in the movie she hides in a laundry bin and is secretly smuggled out by Mr. Bundles, the laundry man. And escapes, runs wild, is brought back by a policeman who sees her and recognizes her. And then as she is kind of she's waiting to talk to Miss Hannigan about her punishment, or I don't know if she's like in a side room of Miss Hannigan's office, Grace comes in, Mr. Warbucks's, chic assistant or whatever, has a conversation with Miss Hannigan about how Mr. Warbucks wants to have an orphan for Christmas, and Annie is just at the right place at the right time. And I don't think it's necessarily, you know, her escaping and then her trying to kind of get in on this whole thing. Actually, in the first movie iteration, she kind of is behind Miss Hannigan, or she kind of opens the door and is looking at Grace and kind of motioning to her as Grace is describing to Miss Hannigan what they want. And so Grace kind of ends up saying, Mr. Warbucks loves children with curly red hair, because Annie is in the back and she's like, kind of playing with her. She's hustling, you know? Annie is also a hustler, which is another great American value. But I think she's really just trying to get out of there.
Yeah, I guess my question is more about, it seems like I wish that her adventure in escaping had somehow been the reason why she was chosen.
Right.
Because I feel like she like has this adventure, but it's disparate from why she got to go with Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like my plot suggestion for the writers of Annie, I guess.
How she ends up with Daddy Warbucks, I believe, differs across the movies. Not by much, but I think it does. I read the Wikipedia summary of the 2014 version, and I think it had to do with, I'm just going to look it up so we know. I think it had to do with, he was running a mayoral campaign and wanted to do a little PR.
Here's my orphan?
Yeah. Okay, let's look this up.
It's really unfortunate.
It is. But he had a change of heart in the end. Spoiler alert. Oh, okay. In the 2014 version of Annie, she is trying to save a dog, parentheses Sandy, from bullies. And is nearly run over by a car. However, before that happens, she is saved by William Stacks, played by Jamie Foxx, who is a germaphobe cell phone mogul running for mayor. Annie's rescue goes viral on the internet, boosting Stacks' popularity per suggestion of Stacks' campaign manager, Guy Dan-Lilly. All right, so that is a little bit different. So that is connected to, I mean, in that version, she's not trying to escape from the orphanage. She's going to wait outside a restaurant that she thinks she will find her parents at. So you see how it's kind of like a slight modification from the original?
And sort of adjusts for, like, it's less being stuck in you know, an early 20th century orphanage and more, like, just trying to, more the single-handed focus on finding the parents.
Right, right.
Which we haven't really touched on at all, but, like, that is Annie's goal throughout the musical. She's trying to find her parents, and unfortunately they're dead.
Yes.
Just, yep.
Yep.
But then she gets adopted by Warbucks. So it all works out in the end.
It does, yeah.
I mean, it is just sad. But I guess the point is, like, at the beginning they thought that she was just, she thought that she had been, like, left at the orphanage and that her parents were still out there and she just needed to find them. And then she found out that her parents had actually passed away and was like, oh, okay, like, that's obviously very sad. But also now, like, you can be taken, now you're, like, able to be taken care of and you don't have the villains of the piece are trying to pretend they're her parents so they can, like, get the money and exploit her. So they're able to establish that that's not true, which is good. And then she's able to go to a loving home.
Yeah. And it's pretty remarkable how quickly she transitions from, oh, my parents are dead, to, oh, I have a new dad now. You know.
Yeah.
But maybe she, yeah.
I mean, she grew up her whole life without her biological parents, so I think it was like, obviously difficult, but it's still like, okay.
Yeah.
Now it's more just, like, about getting closure.
Yes.
For this 11-year-old.
Exactly.
Than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a dad who loves her.
Yeah, and a mom, too, because he technically falls in love with Grace.
Oh my gosh, of course, yes.
It's heavily implied that they end up together.
So, you know.
Yeah. Grace is such a pure character. I mean, she's just great, you know.
She's doing what needs to be done.
Yeah, she's doing a lot for the play.
Yeah.
I would just love to give a shout out to the 1999 movie version of Annie. It was made for TV, which usually does not set a high bar. However, I would like to just read off a few of the actors that were cast in this version of the film. Okay, it's refreshing. So Kathy Bates is Miss Hannigan,
mm-hmm.
obviously an American treasure. Alan Cumming is in this film,
yeah.
as is Kristen Chenoweth, and Sarah Hyland, a la Modern Family, plays Molly, which was sort of Annie's unofficial younger sister / BFF at the orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that Annie's kind of protecting.
Audra McDonald
yeah. is Grace, which is, like, such a good casting choice. And then Victor Garber is also, he's Daddy Warbucks. So just, like, it's not the original. The vocals in it maybe aren't as good as what you'd see on Broadway, but it's so, so entertaining. And it's so much fun.
It is. It's also so interesting is, like, they genuinely cast all of these great Broadway people. It's like, how is this a made-for-TV movie? I'm so confused.
Yeah.
Because between Audra McDonald, Kristen Chenoweth, and Alan Cumming, it's like, these are heavy hitters in Broadway.
And they also, they caught a lot of people pretty early in their careers. I mean, maybe Kristen Chenoweth, it must have been early Kristen Chenoweth. Because I know she was in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, but I don't know what year that was.
Yeah. That was, like, 1999 was when she won the Tony for...
Okay. So she Charlie was, Brown. Like, start... Yeah, she was peaking. And Alan Cumming has been around for a while. But they got Sarah Hyland before she was big. I'm just saying. That cast and director was doing something right.
Yeah. And, I mean, Audra McDonald had won... Oh, my God. She'd won 3 of her Tonys by then.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, they were cast in heavy hitters. Hardcore. Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. Kristen Chenoweth and Alan Cumming played the couple that's the villains.
Yes.
And I, oh my gosh, I want to look it up just and watch their scene specifically because that sounds amazing.
Yeah. I'm surprised we made it this far without talking about Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the opening number in Annie. let's not forget about maybe. It's just another great song about being optimistic and
now
dreaming and.
It's time, and maybe when I wake, they'll be there calling me baby. Maybe.
Yeah, this is a nice shout out to that song. I think it generally is quite overshadowed by Tomorrow.
Yeah.
But you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I also forgot. You're never fully dressed without a smile. We have not talked about that one. That one, that is the one that I would reenact with my friends.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yep.
Oh my god.
Because you know, you've kind of got this like group of lady singers, and then the orphans kind of reenact it and play around with it. It's a great song. And as is, okay, there's just so many good songs in the show. Together at Last, great song.
I think so many of the songs are so happy. It's like even the songs, there's a song about struggling in the Great Depression, and it's still kind of cheerful in the way that it's composed, which is very funny. Mm-hmm. This musical is pure escapism.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the character of Annie originates genuinely from, like, a really early time in the 20th century. And I think she was really developed to resonate with all of those people who are struggling so severely. And the same, that she was, like, the escapism of, like, one day someone is going to come and solve all my problems.
Yeah.
And we're going to live that fantasy through this little orphan child.
Right. Escapism is totally an American pastime, too, which is why Annie has made it this far in American pop culture, 100%. But yeah, actually, I just pulled up the song list from the original Broadway recording, and the only song that's a real downer is We'd Like to Thank You, Herbert Hoover, which doesn't make it into any of the movies, but it's basically people in a shanty town singing about how they don't have any food or money. And even that is to a really kind of like upbeat, you know, drumline. But
yeah.
We'd like to thank you, Herbert Hoover, for really showing us the way.
They wanted to arrange it in a at least kind of cheerful way.
Yeah. Oh, and I think I'm going to like it here. Another great song. I'm sorry. I'm just forgetting all the classics. And Easy Street, which is kind of the big song sung by the villains. I mean, that's their big moment. It's so jazzy. It makes me want to, you know, take a trip down to Easy Street myself, to be completely honest.
I want to scam some people.
I mean,
let's get on that scam culture.
Yeah, really.
It's the American dream.
Yeah, it is.
Hashtag Fire Festival.
American scammer.
It's the age of scammers, truly.
It is.
Annie was ahead of her time. Mm-hmm. Or I guess this Hannigan was
ahead
of her time.
Yeah, Annie's definitely more of a hustler. Like, she's working hard for what she wants, but everyone else in that movie, or I guess Miss Hannigan and Rooster and what's her face, St. James or whatever, she's named after a hotel. Yeah, they're scammers. They're straight up scammers.
They're, you know, they're doing their best.
Yep.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, actually, I think that leads us really well into the lightning round.
Yes.
So I want to just jump into this real quick.
Okay.
What is your favorite song?
My favorite song is Tomorrow.
All right. We have discussed that.
I think it's worth saying what's your favorite song and then what's your favorite secondary song in this show, because there are so many bangers in Annie.
All right. What's your favorite secondary song?
Favorite secondary song is, well, this also comes as no surprise, I love NYC.
All right.
That's NYC is a great, great number.
Oh, my gosh. It's so much fun.
Yes.
Now, what's your favorite line in the musical?
I think Shine Like the Top of the Chrysler Building. That's always has stuck out to me. Because as a kid, I had no idea what that meant. I was like, what is a Chrysler Building?
It's shiny.
And then I went to New York and I saw the Chrysler Building in person. And I'm like, now it adds up.
What a magical moment.
And it's a great thing. You can be like, you know, I want diamonds that shine like the top of the Chrysler Building. There's such a wide range of uses for that line in real life.
Thanks. Well, who's your favorite character?
I mean, can it be anyone but Annie? Can it? After this whole conversation, are you surprised?
I am not surprised to hear that it is Annie.
Yeah, I think Annie is just, you know, she's the kid I always wanted to be as a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like the big sister I never had. Because she does really play that sisterly role well.
Well, the follow-up question is, if you were going to play a character, who would you want to play?
100% Miss Hannigan. she'd be so much fun to play.
Oh, my gosh, yes. She's just absurd, fun campiness of a comic villain. And, yeah.
She really is the comic relief of that show, in my opinion. and everyone who I've seen play her, Carol Burnett, Kathy Bates, have done a fantastic job.
Oh my gosh, yes. It is. I think it's a very delightful part. It really, it would be a treat to play.
Yeah. It'd be fun because you wouldn't feel bad playing a villain because you're like, I'm bad, but I'm not that bad compared to a lot of Broadway villains.
Yeah.
Best of both worlds.
Who would you recommend go see the show?
If you're feeling a little down in life, go see Annie. If you're feeling really good about yourself, go see Annie. I think Annie is a great play where you're going to take something a little different away from it every time you see it. I would especially recommend little girls to go see it because that's the first time I saw it. It inspired me, sparked that kind of, optimistic nature in myself, I like to think. But it's hard. I mean, who would you say? Who would you recommend to go see Annie?
No, I think that's a good answer in terms of saying, say it, go see it if you're feeling down, or take your little kids to see it. And I think that's very valid. And it is a show that's appropriate for all ages. It's a show that is almost specifically designed to appeal to a really classic idea and appeal to as many people as possible. So this is not a niche production. This is something that's meant to be enjoyed by lots of different kinds of people.
Absolutely. And especially watching it as a kid, watching it as an adult, two very different experiences for me in terms of kind of understanding the storyline and the motivations and the characters. Although above all, if I could recommend Annie to anyone, it would be to people who haven't seen Annie. Do yourself a favor. Go see the show. It's amazing. Or just watch the movie. There's so many versions of the movie you can watch.
Yeah. And finally, if you could combine this with another musical, what would you pick and why?
Honestly, I would love to see it combined with Hamilton.
Okay.
To be honest, similar concept. I mean, a couple of orphans trying to make their way in the world, find what they're looking for. For Annie, it's a family. For Alexander Hamilton, it's eternal glory, And Annie, I think if there's one thing we learned from the 2014 movie version of Annie is that there's a lot you can do with the original score. And I think it would combine well with more of a hip-hop beat or, element to it. So,
oh my gosh. They both take place in New York?
Yes, they're both New York-based shows.
They're young, scrappy, and hungry.
They are young, scrappy, and hungry.
Oh my god. This is like the Illuminati. Like, I've seen something I've never seen before.
I'm pretty sure Hamilton is just a remake of Annie. Both with Manuel Miranda.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me and listening to my musings about the greatest Broadway show of all time.
Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. If you'd like, you could also review us on Apple Podcasts or give us a star on Overcast. See you next week.